Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, everyone, and once again, welcome to This Week in Mormons. My name is Jeff.
And my name is Al.
And those are our names.
it's all true, everything we say.
It's very true. I'm sad to come and tell you this week that this is going to be our last show.
Lies!
And, so
we're gonna get a new jingle, though. It's gonna be This Week in Mormons. It'd be great.
Just like that.
Maybe.
We'll play all the music from those Living Scriptures tapes from when we were kids.
Or how about Scripture Scouts, man? You ever have that growing up?
I don't remember that. No.
Oh, that was those were a classic series of tapes. It went.
Who made those?
They went hand in hand with the Safety Kids tapes that we'd listen to on long road trips.
I love the Safety Kids so much.
Da, 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 da,
we're the
da,
Safety
da.
Kids, the Safety Kids.
Oh, that was like my life. I think those were the only tapes we had in our enormous 15-passenger van, which is the standard for any Mormon family, I think.
Yeah, I should find some Safety Kids audio bites because I think I have a random CD. I think I have a CD of theirs somewhere, and there's some just hilarious ones.
Do you really? Really have them?
I think I had one. I got it on my mission. Don't ask me why, but I had it, and the Safety Kids CDs would come with the regular songs with the vocals on it, but then in the end they would have just the instrumental tracks of those songs, so like you know to use them for educational purposes or whatever,
right.
So kids could sing along. We did these firesides that we were asked to do them by the stake president. Basically they were comedic representations. They were like an hour long fireside. It was like a glorified road show. And we were supposed to basically teach the first discussion, the first lesson kind of thing, and cover all of that. So there were different ones that we did, and there was a full out thing that we wrote a whole script and we used musical numbers and blah, blah, blah. And the idea was to teach essentially the plan of salvation or what have you. So this is in my last area. We wrote one that was themed around Saved by the Bell. I should post pictures on the website. So we wrote one about Saved by the Bell, and the idea was the seven class periods represented the dispensations, and each of our teachers was the respective prophet of that dispensation. It was very well conceived. And Mr. Belding, we made him God, so he was just never on screen, if you will. He never showed up on stage. We just had him on a speaker on the overhead in the church. So it was all metaphors, and it was funny, and we made all these songs, and some of them we used were Safety Kid songs. And it was good. It was good instructional. It was, like, funny, but we'd get a ton of non-members there, and we'd always try to bring it down in the end, you know, to a more genuine spiritual level where we'd use things from the hymn book. But there were a number of Safety Kid songs where where I played them, and instead I wrote completely different words, all in Spanish.
That's an exciting walk down memory lane, Jeff. Thank you for taking me to that nostalgic place.
I hope you enjoyed it. They were very effective, and you should know that I understand many of them are still used to this day, and I'm proud to say
that's your legacy. Author. That is your legacy.
Apparently, that's my legacy, and also yesterday I was at Disneyland, and I don't know if you know. Did you ever know about Captain EO, Al?
No.
Captain EO was this awesome special effects bonanza done in the 80s starring Michael Jackson. Francis Ford Coppola directed it, and George Lucas was a producer. It was this super big thing, and they just used it as a 20-minute 3D film at Disneyland. It was there from the mid-80s until probably the late 90s, I would guess. Point is, they've brought it back after many years. They took away Honey, I Shrunk the Audience, thank goodness. And now it's this Captain EO tribute. It's very popular. The place is jam-packed, and it's the exact same movie. They didn't try to, you know, pull a George Lucas didn't, like, add special effects to it or anything like that. Anyways, as we're getting in, this guy gives us our 3D glasses. He sees me wearing a shirt with the name of my old band on it. I was just wearing it to wear it. My better half is convinced I was wearing it because I desperately wanted to promote myself, which is not true. I was just wearing
it. Of course.
And yeah, anyways, he pointed out the band, and I was like, do you know what this actually is? He's like, yes. And he wouldn't stop going off. It was probably one of the first times in my life that I've been in a random place like that, and someone has pointed out an old band I was in 10 years ago. And anyway, that's nostalgic.
When we were on the cruise, and we did all of our karaoke numbers as the Magician's Alliance. And then walking to dinner one night, a guy says, hey, It's the Magician's Alliance. And never been prouder in my entire life than that moment.
I almost feel like our listeners deserve more backstory to that. But yeah, that was one of the... Remember I told you that my whole goal for that cruise was for us to have a following
by the end
of it? We had
one between Lee J and the Magician's Alliance. I mean, we were...
Oh, who was the drunk guy that we sang with? Matt?
Good times.
Is that Matt?
Good times.
Matt, the greatest rendition of Bohemian Rhapsody you will ever hear came from fully inebriated Matt featuring, and that's the language we used, featuring the Magician's
Four
Alliance.
Sober dudes on a cruise.
The only... I think we could spend a half an hour reminiscing about the random things that happened on that, like that woman that came
We could reminisce, but we won't because we have a lot of stuff in the news this week.
But this relates to the show. Remember that woman that was talking to us and being kind of flirty with you and everything? And then once she found out we were Mormons, she didn't say
a word, and then she left. Interchange. The flirting was going on, and then she's like, so where are you from? I'm from the Midwest, and then she goes around the table, where are you all from? And finally we get to my buddy Justin, who says, yeah, I'm from Utah. And that set her off to and she just said, wait,
it did.
Are you guys Mormon? Just randomly, like, we go all the way around a circle, four of us. We're all from different places, Michigan, Kansas, California, and then
California,
Utah. And
she
says, wait, are you guys Mormons? We say, yep, sure enough, you know, what are you? And then she's just like, this just turns the cold shoulder. It was game over, done, out of there.
It was pretty dang amusing because she walked by us.
We didn't exist after that.
Yeah, it was hilarious. I was like, what do we do?
Oh, the good old days.
I don't know. The prejudice against us, we don't even know why. We're just innocent.
So anyway, Jeff, why don't you tell us what we got coming up this show?
That was really, really funny. What do we have coming up? Not much. Got the Academy Awards tomorrow. I'm excited for that. The Academy Awards were yesterday. I hope you were satisfied with the results.
Yeah, it's weird recording on Saturday and then putting it up Monday.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people know we do that. We generally record this on Saturdays and then post it on a Monday. And we've come to the realization that many of the... this causes some things we say to be antiquated by the time we put them out. Namely, last week when we were discussing how great the U.S.-Canada hockey game was.
And it was. It was prophetic, Jeff, is what it was.
Yeah, it was. It was a great game. But whereas by Monday morning, everyone knew that we had lost and that Canada had gone on to give us one of the worst closing ceremonies in Olympic history.
Yes, indeed. Well, and so today, the KUMU basketball game going on. It's a big rivalry out here.
Sure. Yeah, I'm predicting all kinds of things. I think the Lakers, that was a great game the Lakers played last night on Sunday. It was awesome. I loved it. I loved the Academy Awards. I was really excited to see Jeff Bridges finally win an Oscar. Boy, I just can't believe that The Longest Yard, not The Longest Yard, what's the movie? That's that Sandra Bullock football movie that everyone saw.
Oh, Blindside.
Yeah, there you go. I just can't believe The Blind Side pulled an upset and won Best Picture over both Avatar and The Hurt Locker. I mean, who knew that was coming? Nobody.
Did you enjoy Blind Side? I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was like an award-winning picture,
though. No, I actually never saw it. I just never, it's one of those ones I never got around to seeing, but I was surprised, even with the expanded 10 nominations for Best Picture, that The Blind... Yeah, that's what I would imagine. It's a good movie, but everyone's like, an Oscar movie? Really?
It's a feel-good movie.
Well, everyone loves to feel good. Everyone loves to feel good, except
I felt it.
It's time for obvious segueing. Oh, but I've got to give my overview. Well, as far as the overview for today, friends, we have a bit of a follow-up to the international students debacle from last week. Excuse me. And we're going to talk a little bit about homophobia and the gay marriage debate in the church. We know this is a sensitive issue, but we're going to...
Particularly one comment from the very Roseanne Barr.
Yes, the very Roseanne Barr, former Roseanne Arnold. Lest we forget her ill-fated marriage to Tom. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in light of Marie Osmond's son having passed away this past week. And then we've got some issues with BYUSA, the BYU Student Service Organization, and their transparency, or complete lack thereof. It is like a mafia over there. And a few other goodies for you. So that's going to be our agenda for the week.
Good times.
Yeah. So as I promised... There's a little bit of a follow-up, not a lot going on here, but last week we talked a lot about, Al, I'm sure you recall, the plight of international students right now at CES, school. I imagine you remember this, yes.
Well, last week they had a full head of steam. They were well organized, getting a petition, charging forward.
They were going crazy. The leader, why don't you say her name, because I don't want to dare butcher my Russian.
Oh, where's her name? Ksenia Andreevna.
You don't know a little bit of that one. So she was their leader, a Russian chick. And apparently, yeah, now they've said that they've done all they can do to make their point to Elder Paul Johnson, who is the CES commissioner in charge of church-sponsored schools. And she said, quote, "We feel that the petition is in good hands right now. Whatever decision Elder Johnson and his committee will come up with will be okay with us. It is in the hands of our ecclesiastical leaders. I'm sure he will give consideration and thorough research on this matter." Close quote. And the sad thing, of course, at the end is that she says, "I've decided not to apply to BYU as I had planned for this coming fall, but I hope to go to BYU Idaho instead, which is a great school for my needs and circumstance."
If there's no more or no greater example of settling than being consigned to BYU Idaho, I don't know what.
And I think consigned is definitely the best verb to describe going there. Yeah.
Well, and I wonder how much of this is just the Russian mafia mentality of, well, we've done all we can. It's in good hands, I assure you. We have to step away from this topic now.
Yes, we do. So anyway, that's kind of, I don't know, I guess it's sad to see. I guess that could mean, of course, that they are actually listening to this group, perhaps.
Or it means that they said, okay, thank you for your input. We've made our decision. And these poor international students have been forced to disband like Robin Hood's Merry Men after Robin Hood dies in the sequel to Robin Hood.
When does Robin Hood die in the sequel to Robin Hood?
You've never seen the sequel, Jeff. I made it in my basement. But the Merry Men were forced to disband, and it was quite tragic.
And Robin Hood was, of course, murdered by Maid Marian.
In his sleep, just like Phil Hartman.
Oh.
It was a parody on Phil Hartman's
I know. It's just, the Phil Hartman thing was tragic when that happened.
That was really, well.
Who gets offed by their wife and then the wife offs herself? That was just messed up, man. I love Phil Hartman.
He was a brilliant comedic actor.
Sad day. So anyway, international students, once again, I stand united with you in solidarity, just like the solidarity that was organized in Poland to stand against communism.
Just like that. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the this comment made by Roseanne Barr, reported in the LA Freethinking Examiner, which, of course, we all know is a reputable news source.
You can find it on many other sources.
But
okay.
Well, I know, but this is the one we picked. So Roseanne Barr said on Thursday that Brian, or let's see, the actual, well, Marie Osmond's son, who is it, Michael Bozo? Michael Brian Bozo, I guess.
Blozil.
Bozo, B-O-Z.
B-L-O-S-I-L, so that's how it's pronounced.
Yeah, so he took his life, Roseanne Barr says, because he had been told how wrong and sick he was every day of his life by his church and the people in it. And then they argue that when a church loudly condemns and belittles an entire segment of the population, is it any wonder that those gay children tragically born into the church become so consumed with depression that they take their own lives? Now, my thought on this, and the reason I wanted to bring it up, is first off, I think Barr trying to say anything of serious consequence is kind of a joke, but
I think Roseanne Barr saying anything is like is pointless at this stage in time.
And I don't want to be insensitive to kind of the issues that the feelings that gay people in the church have. I'm sure. I mean, it can't be easy, right? But there's a bit of a sentiment around let's see, how do I want to say this? There's a bit of a sentiment around gay people in the church and people that are trying to explain why the church is against homosexuality. And really, I think the thing that we forget is that we view homosexuality as a very legitimate, real... I don't doubt that there are, or that my friends that say that they're gay say that they're gay because they like other men. I think that it's very very real. But the thing about it is that, well, and this is kind of the point of the matter, is that if it were, we view it as a temptation, you know, a weakness that we're inclined towards. Some people are inclined towards, and we all have different weaknesses, right? But we kind of feel like there's been an ace given to the gay marriage, not the gay marriage, but just the homosexual kind of platform, because of the fact that society has embraced it. So, I mean, if it were pornography, no one's going to say, I'm a pornographer, this is who I am, this is what makes me happy, so why would you tell me not to do it? You know, I was born this way, this is what I want to do, this is who I am. That expectation isn't there. The same with smoking. I mean, any of these other things we view as temptations that are very real. I mean, addictions are very real. All these things kind of play into it. And then we, you know, and then for some reason, though, homosexuality just has been given this free pass to say, no, you can't expect anybody to resist that or to try and not live that way, because society has embraced it so. Which I think is a bit of a misnomer. You know, I think it's just really kind of put the church in an interesting bind, because we do expect homosexuals in the church to resist that lifestyle and to try and kind of rise above it, right? But apparently, Roseanne Barr's comment here that it was really the church and the people in it that caused his death or that drove him to suicide. I just think it's so outlandish that it's offensive almost to me as a member of the church, not to mention to, you know, gay members of the church that have made a legitimate life for themselves by, you know, just living and being happy, finding happiness in the areas where they can and living their life according to what they believe.
Yeah, and I mean there's a ton to say on this whole topic, obviously. But
sure, yeah.
For one, the first thing I think is, you know, who is Roseanne Barr to be giving advice about any of this to the Osmonds or whatever? We don't know their family dynamic or what, you know, what any of that relationship has been with he and Marie or anything like that. So that's not her place to say anything like that. I'm not going to go out there and pretend that he was told that he was, you know, a filthy bad person or blah, 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 because of any sort of sexual orientation. I mean, anyone who does that, yeah, there's a problem there. That as a church, of course, we don't believe that homosexuality is appropriate. We don't condone it. But at the same time, we by no means believe that there should be hateful practices taken to the gay members of the church. It's a very large, it's a substantial minority within the church. I know many LDS guys who are gay. Having gone to BYU, there is a seedy underbelly to Provo that people are not willing to admit exists, for example. And that's a whole other topic. That's a huge issue for BYU. It's like they fail to acknowledge that 15% of their student body has some serious issues and things to work out. It's just hard to say. It's this fine line, like you said, to come against, for one thing, the church for having a particular stance. I understand that. And I know you and I have differing feelings.
Regardless, it's a fine balance that yeah, you have to walk with this issue, because it's anybody that affiliates themselves with an organization that tells them to live a certain way and doesn't live that way. I mean, of course, there's going to be some guilt there, some frustrations, or that's essentially the catalyst that makes people leave the church, is they end up, you know, embracing a lifestyle that's different from what the church asks of them, or, you know, like the expectations being high, I think are a leading factor in why people leave the religion. So, you know, are the expectations high? I mean, sure, but is that the reason, or does that give anybody that it was homophobia that killed a guy? I think that's just out of line.
I think that's a bit outlandish. You make a good point there, though, that not to diminish the very controversial role and, you know, of homosexuality within the church and this and that and gay rights. But like you said, it could be anything. People fall away from the church because of whatever different thing it is involving what the church has said. are the things that we need to obey, the criteria to which we're supposed to subscribe. And then it could be anything. And if you fail to do that, people fall away because of frustration. It could be anything. It could be just because you really think you should be able to drink alcohol. You know,
yeah.
It could be anything. And I do think, of course, some things, I'm not going to get into the debate of what is taught or what is learned by someone or what is actually a genetic predisposition. Cause I think there's a bit of that in any kind of issue of anything in the church, whatever that may be.
I agree.
And I have always felt that way as far as homosexuality. Cause some people I feel like treat it like it is completely a choice that people choose to be gay.
Which is complete baloney.
I think it's a baloney. I could see instances where maybe you choose based on life experiences and based on experimenting with that side of things that you think it works better for yourself. I could understand that. But I think by and large it's baloney. Yeah, I think they're just like everything else. We know there's a genetic mutation that links alcoholism to genes, you know?
Uh-huh.
Why wouldn't there be something also related to a tendency to be gay? It doesn't, like any other thing, it doesn't mean it's necessarily okay to just throw your hands in the air and be okay with that. You know, who gets up every morning and just says, I am how I am, you know? And I don't want to get in this whole debate of how we can go through whatever it's called, like aversion therapy, you know, and try to de-gayify people or anything like that. But it is a dicey, a difficult issue in this day and age. And, you know, I'm from California and we have not exactly been lacking our fair share of gay rights debates in recent years, and like with Prop 8 and everything like that. And you know, I don't even want to get into Prop 8 and what my whole experience was with Prop 8, because that was interesting. It's the hard thing of seeing what the church thinks or what the prophet says we need to support, but then also what the rational what man would say we need to support. It's a very, very, very contentious issue.
No, you know, you're absolutely right. Well, because there's a whole sentiment, right? Well, I know for me personally, there's a, you try and fancy yourself a progressive thinker. You know, this is, I'm socially progressive. I'm accepting of people. You know, if they want to go for it, like that's kind of the mentality that I have with a lot of this stuff. Is it's just like, you know what, if that's how you feel like you need to be, go for it. Who cares? Yeah. But there is, in the end, like you have, you come into the issue of, you know, do we believe that God said that this is what needs to happen? I mean, when you break it down, take away all the build up of the argument and everything. I mean, it comes down to, do you fear God more than man? And if you have a firm belief in your religion and what you believe it to be and to stand for, that's what it comes back to is, well, you know, maybe this is just the way that God needs this to be, right? So,
yeah, and I don't think any of that is to diminish that it is a legitimate struggle, whether it's from a standpoint of faith or whether from just society in general, to try to deal with these things of having homosexual tendencies in a culture that so greatly frowns upon
it. Right. No, that's true.
You know, and it's not to diminish any of that. And obviously, you know, I don't like the terminology like we need to fix this. We need to fix people or anything like that. Because like you said, people are who people are. It is just that hard, hard relationship of understanding the will of the Lord and what the prophet has said and having that make sense in someone's head and anyone's head. And even I on my own, I'm not saying I've struggled. I've never struggled with homosexual tendencies, but even I've struggled to get my head around some of these things in the past. Like I believe firmly in equal actual civil rights for anybody, but then for me in my mind it's more of a debate of what are civil rights and then what is a religious sacrament, and how I don't think those always necessarily need to be intertwined when it comes to actual law.
You know who I really would like to hear from on this issue is Roseanne Barr.
Definitely. Because she's an expert. I mean, anyone that could be married to Tom Arnold clearly knows a lot about relationships.
It's true.
I think they should definitely highlight this situation on that show, The Marriage Ref, if you've seen it, the one that was, insanely
that was
hyped
brilliant.
By Did you like it? Because I think it's a pretty weak show.
I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. But
I don't know. I watched the premiere. I was mad as lame as the closing ceremonies of the Olympics were. Like they just preempt it. Like it's the middle of the ceremony and
Jeff, you didn't miss much The inflatable moose came out.
I mean, I wanted to see the inflatable moose.
That's all right.
Side note, I don't think The Marriage Ref is that great of a show, and I don't think it'll last more than a season, tops.
Jerry Seinfeld has given it the Seinfeld bump.
It's good. Yeah, but who knew Jerry Seinfeld could create something that is that unfunny? And that is my point. And I think the host, Tom Pappas, is the weakest link in the entire production. So anyway,
I would agree with that.
That's an unrelated note. Now, moving right along, since we could talk about the other topics for
gone from a very quite some a very time. Heavy issue now.
For a very heavy issue. This is still something that's kind of heavy, but something that has always interested me. Having gone to BYU, I have always appreciated that I appreciate what a great university it is, and I really, really, really did enjoy my time there, and I especially appreciated my education there. But I also feel that sometimes the culture surrounding BYU and its practices and administration there's a strong lemming mentality. This is a fine line, you know, between we follow the prophet because we have faith, and then just we follow anything done by any administration or organization at BYU because clearly every bit of it comes from on high. If that makes sense. So dealing with this, there's been quite the drama going on at BYU in recent weeks in that one of the journalists put out an article about how BYUSA, which is the BYU student administration, they're not transparent in anything they do. And this was discussing their budget and how they allegedly have outlandish budgets, that they spend money they don't need to spend on all this stuff. And this has been, I love it. It's like every March there's a good scandal at BYU, which is just great. I'm serious. When I went there, let's see, we had Dick Cheney was supposed to speak at graduation, which they had great enough protests that we were in the New York Times. It was outstanding. And
were you part of that protest?
I can neither confirm nor deny whether I stood in front of the JFSB one day with a sign. And then the year before that, the Todd Hendricks scandal. And if anyone's interested in that, please email me, because
Wait, who's Todd Hendricks?
Todd Hendricks was the scandal. He was getting his master's, I think, but he was an employee of BYUSA. So he wasn't like in the student association himself, but he was some sort of administrator in it or something like that. And he wrote a letter to the Daily Universe, BYU's student newspaper, a beacon of journalistic integrity, and talked about practices and things that could be done better regarding BYUSA elections and organization because it's not transparent. There's all these closed-door decisions and everything. And so he released that. Then they sacked him for it, basically. And as much as because he betrayed his employer or la-ti-da-ti-da, and there's some relevance to that. We've all seen Jerry Maguire, and we'll see what happens to him. But what, as it turned out, apparently there were some meetings with him where they said, hey, you know, your wife is pregnant. And, you know, if you don't go public with this, with us sacking you for it, you know, we'll keep her on the health insurance through pre and postnatal care and all this
scandal
and this and that. So it was. So instead, Todd Hendricks went to the press with it and was like, what's this? They're trying to give me hush money, you know, so that it doesn't look bad that they sacked me for just voicing it. Because he was basically voicing a view that was, I've read everything he wrote about it. It was constructive criticism about things that could be bettered. It was like an interoffice memo of things they could improve, which I don't think is grounds for dismissal. In most jobs, I don't, you know, and so this sparked this enormous protest at BYU, which is the irony, of course, being that at BYU you have to have permission to protest from the administration. All about free speech. This was all about free speech. So the Todd Hendricks scandal was massive, and I should post some. Maybe I'll post some pictures on the on the page of photos I took of the protest they had of that, because it was people had duct tape over their mouth that said BYUSA on it. This one guy started making BYUSSR shirts. Yeah, it was great time. So it seems that every March, BYUSA gets rocked by a scandal.
It's such an odd kind of island of Mormonism. Oh, you know, people look at it as a representation of Mormon culture as a whole, and then the people that go there look at it as this kind of contrived hodgepodge mix of, you know, you have the religious elements there, and obviously revelation plays a part in the higher echelons of the school decisions, but just, you know, you get down to the nitty gritty, and it's, you know, it's run like any other organization with schmucks and mix-ups and mess-ups and the whole bit.
Yeah. Yeah, and so the main article here, it's funny, because originally I believe the author was anonymous, and then they've since posted his name. I appreciate that the Daily Universe has stood behind him. They have not buckled at all in any of this. And this whole article, it says, you know, how is BYUSA spending student tuition dollars? He found that BYUSA, this was great. A lot of this was because of hearsay, but they felt like they heard enough from different people that had worked with BYUSA that it was worth investigating at least. So they did find a document that said that for one semester, BYUSA had expenditures in excess of $260,000 during one semester. And that's not including salaries and benefits for paid staff. And of course, BYUSA declines to comment, because they don't have to. It's a private university. They don't have to disclose anything, you know. Unless it says right here, as they said in an email, as a private university, BYU does not publish or release any budget information. Blah, 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 blah. So this does seem outlandish, because BYUSA, for one, is not a student government. It is only a student service association. They hand out hot chocolate on cold days. You know, they do just stuff like that. They want you to get involved. So 260 grand does seem excessive. And I know firsthand where some of that money goes. For one thing, the president and vice president that are elected to BYUSA, which, might I remind you, have no real power. They're like the Queen of England, okay? They get their tuition waived by BYU, and I feel like, for what, you know? And I've known some people that have been the BYUSA president, and, for example, they were purchased clothing and suits for photo ops and things like this, and these are people who are totally of means, do not need BYU to buy them any sort of attire. And yet they just throw it out there like that. And this article discusses many other things, of course, that the BYU does own a cabin in Park City, these getaways, reasonably lavish 5-course meals, things like this. And from my experience, it's hard not to look at BYUSA as an organization that exists less to provide service to the students and more as an organization that helps its members pad their resumes for grad school and law school.
Well, I think that's a strong majority of every organization in college. You know, yeah. I've been through four different universities in my quest for a degree.
You're a winner.
And collegiate ADD. Yeah. I like different climates at different times of the year. So, but like every organization that I encountered, almost save maybe one or two that actually got things done. But every other organization, I mean, they'll have a great mission statement and their mantra is solid and sounds great. But as soon as you get down to it, I mean, it's just a bunch of kids that meet together a couple times a semester and promise to do some things that they might get around to doing. And then at the end, they try to do better the next semester and nothing ever really happens. And you could say the same about them, is that, you know, it's just a bunch of organizations that are trying to pad resumes. You know.
Like, yeah, you could. But
like, what is it, the Republican club, and then the Democrats club, and everybody's got them, but
the funny thing, with these clubs, I mean, there's tons of clubs at BYU, many of which function under the auspices of BYUSA. BYUSA's budget is enormous, whereas they give these clubs like $50 for a semester. So that's why, and you said you take something like BYU Democrats or BYU Republicans, which they have hundreds of members each, and they have to figure out ways to fund stuff on their own to do things, while BYUSA is blowing $250,000 on who knows what. And what makes this more frustrating, I think, from anyone's point of view, is that if BYUSA were not in the wrong on this, why don't they open up their books and prove it to everybody? You know? It's just like how people think the moon landing was faked. Why doesn't NASA just give us a telescope and let us see the rover and the flag on the moon? Just point a telescope to the moon and say, look, it's really there. See? I don't know why they don't do that. But the same thing. Open up your books then, BYUSA. If you are not in the wrong on this, then open up your books. And it's they've been just assailed by the Daily Universe for about 2 weeks now. They keep writing stuff and defending their editorials.
I just see it as kind of a gentleman's club, you know, where it's very close-lipped and in all honesty, I mean, nothing will happen of this. They know full well that if they just keep their mouth shut for another semester or two, everything blows over.
Yeah, right? It does. Because with the Todd Hendricks thing, for example, a protest was imminent. And like I said, you have to have permission for protesting at BYU. You can't just assemble. There's no right to assemble at BYU. Basically, the the Bill of Rights are waived while you're there. But at the last minute, they capitulated and allowed the protest because they knew it was going to happen no matter what. Or if they banned it last minute, it would just make it look worse. So this story hasn't died yet. So I wonder how long it'll last. And that's there's great comments on this. Do you want to, for example, our idiot of the week, as we have decided to discuss. Do you want to hear this comment?
Sure. What do you got?
This is from Eric Hatch of Naperville, Illinois. You know who you are. He says, and I quote. This is from over a week ago. But he says, I am curious as to the purpose of Steve Pierce's article, Following the Money. The BYUSA, that sounds like that chick from South Carolina, the Iraq. The BYUSA spends a lot of money trying to better the experience for students here at BYU. So what? Why does Steve Pierce feel the need to expose this or try to stir controversy? Does he not want dances or to allow the students to have a voice in university policies? Does he not like the homecoming festivities? Does he not want activities for married students? Does he not like the 80 or so clubs that the BYUSA sponsors? Or is he just trying to spark controversy and reduce the student experience here at BYU?
I think we should oust him as a communist.
And then it says, maybe he doesn't realize that many other universities all over the U.S. have student associations with substantially larger budgets, which is true.
Do you not want health care? Do you not want us to take care of you? Your job?
But it's funny. It's like this guy doesn't read anything. Because for one, he says, yeah, there's other places with large student associations with massive budgets, but these are usually student governments and they are public universities that are accountable for their budgeting procedures because they're public. They have to be. But I love the line, why does Steve Pierce feel the need to expose this or try to stir controversy?
Why would anybody?
To you, Eric Hatch, I will say to you, it is called journalistic integrity, sir. And and it's the reason they do what they do. It is to get to the bottom of things and attempt to expose issues if any actually do arise.
Everything was going so nice. Why would you want to stir it up?
I know. Why would you want to cause problems? Just keep it quiet. Everyone will be happy. We all live in ignorance. Don't worry. Just be happy. Just be placated. It's okay. And I also like the line when he says, doesn't he want to allow the students to have a voice in university policies? I think by attempting to expose possible questionable behavior with the accounting at BYUSA, that he is allowing students to have a voice in university policies, whereas the clear dystopian police state that Mr. Hatch is proposing would not allow a voice in university policies.
He's like the Russians who...
Yeah, just keep quiet. We'll give you food. We'll give you a house. None of it will be great, but you'll have it. That's all that matters.
Well, you talk to the Russians, a majority of them, and they love Putin. And you're like, why do you love this guy? They're like, the Russian people, we need a leader with an iron fist, somebody that'll just kind of pound us back in shape and tell us what to do. That's Putin. And I'm like, you fools, if only you knew what you could do if you thought for yourself.
Yeah. Well, and then we could get in a whole debate, and I could elaborate on my graduate education to you, because I wrote a paper on this, but I'll spare
that
you.
That would be lovely.
I wrote a paper called The Vodka Revolution, and why Russia has not undergone a color revolution, in quotes, like Ukraine and Georgia and Kyrgyzstan and all of them. Anyway, if anyone's interested in reading it, I will gladly email it to you. So there's one more quote I wanted to read on this, and even Al, you noticed this one, from BYU Reader. And this was a response to the initial editorial talking about this issue. There are so many comments. If you go to the opinion page, these are all on the Daily Universe's website, so it's all there. But she says, her second point, I don't know why I'm saying she. The second point, I think the Daily Universe should be careful about publishing these kinds of seemingly aggressive articles about a well-intentioned volunteer organization in a school wherein revelation plays some role in its administration. I don't mean to say that there is no room for some criticism of BYUSA or that you, the Daily Universe, should shy away from such topics. I feel that you do need to be more sensitive in your criticism. And there's a lot more she writes. I just want to get on the point there that, and if you actually look, I commented on her thing. I don't know if you're looking at that right now, Al.
Oh, yeah, where you say, I really don't think the revelation gets all the way down to BYUSA. So many people think that every decision made at BYU is made through prayer and revelation, when in fact the majority of the decisions undertaken at the university are just typical administrative decisions. President Samuelson is the only one with a calling, folks, not BYUSA staff.
And there it is, BYUSA staff, to my knowledge. Well,
it's so funny to me that that people just let themselves be groomed as sheep. And it's just so, it's hilarious to me that these kind of sentiments come out of people's mouths, you know, where they're like, We don't want to have free speech. There are people saying bad words. We should oppress that.
Because if there were free speech, it would go against the golden model of happiness that BYU wants to put out there for everyone.
Yeah, just
and there's something to be said for that. I get it. I mean, I really loved the environment at BYU, aside from things like that, wanting to have freer speech and associations and whatnot. But I appreciated the fact that it was a clean campus where certain standards were respected. Like, yeah, I liked that a lot. It was nice. I guess in some ways it comes at a price. You know, if we let all these vagrants run over campus and those terrible hippies with their beards.
If we let a newspaper publish controversial stories.
Yeah, so my hat goes off to the Daily Universe to stick into their guns with this thing, man. They have not buckled. They've just been hanging in there saying, dude, we're doing this. Just how it's going to be.
Some ballsy folks.
So roll. So everyone, if you want to look into that, look all over the Daily Universe's opinion page or whatnot. We'll post some links to it on thisweekinmormons.com, our lovely website. Now, before we go, I wanted to point out one of my cool blog finds for the week, because we want to go off on a lighter note, and I think this is funny. This is a blog called More Manatee, it's M-O-R, then man, and then I-T-Y, .blogspot.com. This is a guy named Jeff Lindsay, who is an LDS guy in Appleton, Wisconsin, who, surprisingly, tends to take a pro-LDS view. There's some pretty funny bits in here, but this first one is the one that got me right here. He published it today, and it says, it's called Time for Mo Sure Food Marking.
I like the inflection on that to bring the question mark to life. Well done.
Yeah. Oh, thank you very much. So it says,
Time for Mo Sure Food Marking?
So look at the point right here. Everyone knows about kosher food, and many food companies show respect for the dietary constraints of Judaism by putting kosher food symbols, like a circle with a U or K, inside of their kosher products. Since the world population of Jews is about the same as the world population of Latter-day Saints, maybe someday we'll get my proposed LDS equivalent of kosher markings. Mosher markings, as in Mormons can be sure it's okay.
With the whole idea being that you know, word of wisdom, appropriate food and beverages will be marked appropriately.
Yeah, yeah. I think is just brilliant, and I would love to see things like that, especially in Utah, brought to market. I think that would be amazing.
You could go to what's the big buffet there?
Golden Corral, Chuck Wagon?
No, there's one that's got a great name.
There's Chuck Wagon.
Chuck Wagon. Yes, you go to the Chuck Wagon and have all of your delicacies imprinted with a Mosher marking.
It is like,
and everybody could know, they could just eat freely.
It's great. That'd be great. We've got kosher food. We've got vegan food. You know, vegans get, and we've got halal food for the Islamic population.
Go to a baseball game. They're like, we got this hot dog, kosher hot dog. We got a Mosher beverage.
And you say, tell
here.
Me, has the alcohol been fully cooked out?
They'll be like, it's Mosher.
And you're like, well, okay, I'm good. Let me enjoy the jazz game. I'm done and done. It's brilliant.
I think we should throw our full support behind
this. I think my full support goes behind Jeff Lindsay, who is basically my new hero of the week. I said hero like a Canadian right there. And the site's great. We'll post a link. I love the symbol that he made up for the Mosher symbol, word of wisdom safe. And it shows three angel Moroni eyes. One of which has his trumpet going to the right, and then the center one has two trumpets going each way.
Oh, Jeff, we'll send people to look.
Yeah,
at
I
this.
Guess so.
We can show them. You're not painting a very good word picture.
The symbol's pretty strong, though. I think it's like the best symbol I've ever seen. So anyway, that will be it for us this week, I think, unless Al has any other wonderful things to say.
No, it's a good week, man. Good show.
And you can be the judge of that as well. So, everyone, once again, we appreciate your comments, insights, et cetera, over at thisweekinmormons.com, or anything you want to say to contact@thisweekinmormons.com.
We welcome the mail.
So please, for those of you at BYU, enjoy your week with Big Brother. Read 1984, if you will, and Fahrenheit 451, and get back to us and let us know how you feel.
Oh, please. All right. Have a great week, everyone.
Thanks a lot, Al. And for Al, I'm Jeff, and this has been This Week in Mormons.